นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะพุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนะมัสสามิJust as I was about to come over here to the Dhamma Hall this evening, I glanced at today's Sunday newspaper that somebody brought to the monastery. And there was this big headline that says, Schools in Crisis. And I immediately thought, oh, well, so it's schools in crisis now. A few days ago it was the Labour Party that was in crisis, and then before that it was the subprime mortgage economy crisis. In America they're talking about meltdown crisis, and then we've been hearing in the last few years about the environmental crisis and crisis of faith, whatever. And I got to wondering, why is the case that this is so appealing? Why? Why does the headline crisis grab attention? Because it's not even always a crisis. It could be the case, and to some degree it probably is the case, that our intelligence is alerting us to imminent dangers and difficulties, and quite suitably we pay attention to these issues that threaten our harmony and contentment, and in paying attention to them we avoid things getting worse, which is fair enough. But I'm not convinced that's really what's going on. And it seems to me that there's something in the mind that really loves crisis. Is something that is getting off on it, feeding on it. And almost the extent where I would suggest that there's part of the mind or one mind state that is addicted to it. And socially this is the case, and also individually. Certainly I think it's worth having a close look at. And what is it that feeds on crisis, that feeds on drama? Yeah. In the last few years I've started reading novels. Ajahn Abhinanda probably tell me off for talking about this. He says monks are not supposed to be reading novels. I'd never read novels. I think up until about the age of 50 I'd read maybe 5 novels in my whole life. As you know, I'm not a great reader. Quite the opposite. But a few years ago, I don't know what happened, but somehow I became aware that I could read a novel. Now, I'm not reading any old trash. Rest assured, it's things like the Pullman trilogy, which I can recommend highly. And more recently, Sanson's, it's not the trilogy. What is it when you've got 4 books? What is it? Is it when you've got 4 books? Is it a quilogy? What is it? Anybody know? We got 4 books? Okay, well, anyway, Sanson's novels, all about, and the latest one apparently called Revelation, but Sovereign and Dark Fire. But reading these novels, I see a little bit about what people are getting off on. This very cunning way of crafting a crisis. And building it up, and the same as movies, isn't it? building this crisis up, and there's something getting off on it. But why? I mean, why get off on a crisis, for goodness sake? I mean, crisis doesn't mean exactly contentment or well-being or happiness or goodness, does it? I mean, crisis is crisis. So why, what is it? I mean, movie industries is one of the biggest money spinners in the world. And if it's a kind of a Walt Disney movie, they kind of develop this crisis and then they solve it and then you have a good weep and feel better afterwards. If it's an art house movie, they can develop a crisis and then leave you hanging in the middle of the crisis and you go away feeling sick. Well, what part of our minds, is it a wholesome part of our mind? Is it wholesomeness? Is it wholesomeness that feeds on crisis? Because it is an energy. Is it a sustainable source of energy? Is it a wholesome source of energy? Is it a healthy source of energy? So my contemplation on this leads me to see that it's not a healthy form of energy that we're feeding on. It's kind of like a false hit. You get a rush or you get a buzz of this drama that gets built up. Well, why is it that people get addicted to the news? The news is not talking about contentment and well-being and happiness and goodness. The news is always talking about crisis and John Humphrey's voice. I mean, John Humphreys is in a permanent state of crisis. That's why they pay him so much and whipping up crises for entertainment. So why does it work and what's really going on there? Because it's big, it's serious. Well, it seems to me that when the mind is still feeling good about having a fixed position, whether it's for or against, then we're vulnerable to this kind of energy. Mm-hmm. And this is not just an intellectual exercise or an intellectual argument, but we can come down to the body and investigate what happens when you're watching a movie or you're listening to gossip or reading a novel or whatever. Well, the same thing with watching road accidents. You see how many people gather around to watch road accidents. Yeah. Or racing, that's the same thing, isn't it? You know, the Olympics, massive, expensive crisis that's being constellated. Now, I should say that I'm not suggesting that all of these are equally unhealthy or equally dangerous, but still the dynamic of setting up a drama and then getting off on it, feeding on it, is something we really need to look at. Because if we do get addicted to it in a social level, of how society we live in is addicted to this world of crises, well then I think the same thing goes on inwardly. Yeah. Look what's going on in our minds when we come to sit and everything is really good, we finished the day's work, there's nothing to do. And isn't it the case that the mind likes to stir up trouble? Stir up fantasies of things that are already finished. We've gone over and over and over and over them. Or things that haven't happened yet and we can't control them, but we speculate and go over and over and over. What's going on? I think, to some degree anyway, what's going on is this addiction to crisis. This addiction to drama. We're fascinated about it. We're feeding on it. It's producing chemicals that our body is addicted to. And it's a kind of like, in a way, it's a sort of like, it's a like any other habit, any other drug addiction, that has got a certain pattern that it's just will is not enough. Mm. Like some of the speech habits that we might have, things that we say or do, and I really want to stop saying that or stop doing that, and just an act of will doesn't do it, right? So I would suggest that if we look at this and consider it as a whole body mind contemplation, and again emphasize not just as a mental exercise, because we could argue endlessly about the validity of this opinion, but if we really come down to the body and we feel what's going on, and to see whether it's something we actually want to maintain, being in a state of crisis. Imagined crisis. A lot of the time it's not even real crisis. It's an imagined crisis that we whip up so that we can feel like there's something going on. And we get the sense of certainty. I am for this or I'm against that. I agree with this or I disagree with that. Who wants Gordon Brown to step down and have a re-election of the leader of the Labour Party? This is not a question. I don't want a show of hands. Who wants Obama to win? And who wants George Bush and Mrs. Palin to win? Again, I don't want a show of hands. But we can look at these things and what does it feel like? I really want it. Now, in that case, you might be completely indifferent. But maybe it's cricket. Or maybe something else. But the feeling in the body when we're taking a fixed position, what does it feel like? If we examine that, in my experiences, and you examine that, it always feels partial. It's not whole. It's like it's always incomplete. The feeling of, even if what you're for, like wisdom and compassion, that's what I'm for. I'm for lots of wisdom and compassion. And I'm also for the Buddhist path of practice leading to wisdom and compassion. Well, these days I have some equanimity about this matter, but I can remember when I was a lot younger and feeding on, really grasping at the Buddhist teachings. Mm-hmm. Well, why is it that people get addicted to the news? The news is not talking about contentment and well-being and happiness. And pittance and goodness. The news is always talking about crisis and John Humphrey's voice. I mean, John Humphrey's is in a permanent state of crisis. That's why they pay him so much and whipping up crisis. And against other teachings, I was a little bit of a Buddhist fundamentalist at one stage. And so we don't want to just argue ourselves out of this position. It's not what I would encourage, but rather as an investigation of mindfulness to come into the body and is this peaceful? I know for myself it's not. This condition being partial for things all the time, taking positions for or against. Or you can also take the position of being not for anything or not against anything. You say, oh, I'm somebody who's not for anything. And we start letting go of our views and opinions because we can understand the argument about why that's not so healthy and doesn't need to balance and so. But then we can attach to, there's something in our mind, and then grasp at the idea of being not for anything or not against anything. Well, that's very woolly-minded. But if we practice investigation, if we really contemplate these things with interest and really consider as a whole body-mind investigation what's going on, maybe what we start to come across is what I think is what the Buddha is referring to by the middle way. This position, it's not a position, but rather it's a perspective. That awareness, that mindfulness, that watchfulness that's able to see the mind tending to take a position for or tending to take a position against. And if we watch this, we can see this, how the I gets constantly, I am for this, I am against that. And if we listen to what the Buddha had to say about the insubstantiality of his I, and we get interested in that investigation, say, well, yeah, this is how I gets born. Even like attaching to goodness. Today's Dhammapada verse, those of you that got the Dhammapada full moon day reflection in the mail this morning, was about verse 341, which was about the Buddha pointing out just this, that even attaching to good leads to the tediousness of rebirth. He wasn't talking about just becoming good and taking a position against evil or bad, but rather shifting our perspective on all the activity of the heart and mind, all the experiences, good, bad, agreeable, disagreeable, shifting our perspective so it's a non-grasping relationship, moving back into the mindfulness that simply sees goodness but doesn't attach, sees that which is not good, sees badness, wrongness, but doesn't attach. And this perspective, this is an option that if we don't have the right education, we probably doesn't even occur to us. And sadly, and to me, I must say, still surprisingly, it always surprises me, I travel around and see that people don't know about this. I guess you get used to it after a while, you just take it for granted. This is what we're doing. You know, when we start to suffer, we start to get lost in partiality and getting off on being a somebody, taking a fixed position for or against, and sooner or later we'll start to suffer. When we experience this, well then we pull back and we reflect on, say, where am I grasping and holding on? Well, if we don't know that there is the middle way, if we don't suspect that there is this possibility, well, we don't contemplate it in the way, and that's very difficult. If we do suspect that it's there, and hearing the Buddha's teachings, well then, what starts to dawn is the question of, well, where am I going for refuge? Where do I get energy from? Yeah. And if we're practicing, well, then we start to discover for ourselves, not necessarily because we think ourselves there, but because we start to feel it. We start to feel that there's energy. You get energy out of being mindful. We don't have to only get energy out of being for or against. Yeah. There is a form of energy. There's a form of meanness, of solidity, of certainty that can come from having a fixed opinion. Yeah, and that sort of energy loves crisis. It feeds on crisis, and if it doesn't have one, it'll create one. It'll worry about something. It'll create a relationship crisis, an emotional crisis, a global crisis, a personal crisis. Yeah, so we can get that rush again, get that energy again. But this path of practice, the path of mindfulness, the path of awareness, the path of reflection, shows us that we can also access energy, confidence, clarity, aliveness in other ways. And this is a spiritual energy. And from this perspective, if we are in this place, then how do we feel about when we listen to the voice of the news broadcaster? You know, if you've been meditating in the morning and then you turn on Radio 4, or if you want a really serious dose, you turn on Radio 5 Live. I don't know the names of the broadcasters on Five Lives, but they've got a certain sort of more of a push. It sounds like they're taking some sort of medication or something. There's something there that's kind of coming down the wires. And so how does that impact on us? There's something, oh no, this is not attractive. Yeah, because when we're in that place, when we're in that place of contentment, we're in the place of Dhamma, then we recognize these artificial crises that human beings invent to feed on. It's like junk food. It's the deluded state of mind that feeds on crisis, that creates crisis. If we have this inspiration, and all of us here will have had this experience, otherwise we wouldn't be in a place like this, but then this becomes our effort to recognize the sustainable source of energy, the energy that takes us back to Dhamma, that takes us back to balance, that feeds contentment, that feeds well-being for ourselves and for others. So awareness, mindfulness, determination. This evening, now Anagarika Mikhail Kanaba over here, you can call him Michael also, previously from somewhere in Germany. Whereabouts? Leipzig. Somewhere near Leipzig in former East Germany. And we're very happy to see him join the community. And the reason he's taking up this training is because he appreciates the energy of determination and renunciation. Aditana, Nikamma in Pali. People who are still feeding on crisis, feeding on drama, would look at somebody like Michael and think, what a wally. this guy's really lost the plot, wasting his life. And people do say that. They come here, they say, oh, what a pity. You know, they see at an ordination, you know, it's not really, you see, sometimes he's, oh, what a pity, he's wasting his life. And, well, you know, that's because they don't understand anything other than junk food. They don't realize that you can get energy from just being determined, you know, by making a resolution, a resolve in the mind. It's very powerful. It's not the same thing as fighting. Yeah. I think I've probably shared with you in the past how my own little experience of this, which was very insightful in my fifth year as a monk, when I had gone back to New Zealand, and while I was in Thailand, I had done what I was supposed to do with regards to giving up the habit of smoking tobacco. I was in charge and allow it, and so with a little restraint and mindfulness and wise reflection, I managed to give it up. But when I was in New Zealand, the other side of the planet from Ajahn Chah and the restrictions of the monastery, and some of my old conditioned, deluded sense of self raised their head, and I was rather keen on having a cigarette again. And I thought, well, it won't matter because I can stop it. I've stopped it before, and I've got this ability to stop it. And, well, it wasn't quite so easy. I got addicted. And there I was, you know, alone as a monk, trying to be inspiring in New Zealand, trying to encourage people's faith in the Buddha Dhamma, and I was hiding off in the bushes having a fag. Very embarrassing. Sometimes sneaking up to the toilet to even have a quick fag before going to give a Dhamma talk. Oops, I've lost the plot, that's true. What do you do? Well, yeah, it wasn't the same as being in the monastery with all these inspiring examples around and a lot of space to contemplate. Yeah. So, yeah, I just make a determination, make an aditana. So I bow down in front of the shrine. There's the Buddha, which represents for me the possibility of complete freedom that we human beings have, perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, perfect purity. So I bow down and I make this determination in my mind, verbally, actually said it outwardly. I was alone in the room. It says, for the rest of my time in New Zealand, may the Buddha bear witness to my determination to not smoke another cigarette. I said three times, and then gone. The thought, I don't think the thought even ever occurred to me again. So, wow, that's the power of determination. You know, I had struggled so badly before trying to give up cigarettes. And I would try, and then I would have to fight the habit. This was a different energy. This is a different energy. This is spiritual energy that had come in this. And of course, this wasn't some great realization, or it wasn't having been blessed by some master, but it's the cultivation. Over 5 years of training as a monk in Thailand, you cultivate the practice of Aditana Paramita, of determination, of Nikamma Paramita, of renunciation. These are the kind of things, this is the kind of energy that Michael wants to tap into, to cultivate. And coming to stay in a place like this. So it's useful, I think, to stop and ponder on these things. Where are we getting our energy from? And if we don't want to feed on the drama, if we don't want to feed on the crises that the deluded world is feeding on, if that's not attractive to our hearts, then where are we going to get our energy from? Well, I think we can contemplate these examples the Buddha gave us, you know, mindfulness, awareness, determination, renunciation, loving kindness. Yeah. Loving kindness is to have a conscious relationship with a heart's capacity for being loving. And sometimes you can read about the Buddha's teachings on loving kindness and think, oh yeah, that's beautiful, I think that's a good idea, that's why I'm a Buddhist, yeah, I go along with that, but then don't do anything about it. Or maybe you reflect on it a bit and you think, oh yeah, I have a heart of loving kindness. Yeah, I love my mother, I love my dog, and if I put my mind to it, I can love all beings, and if I try hard, I can even love some of those politicians that are dislikable. But that's not the same thing as really investing in it. And it sadly can show up at times when we do find ourselves in an actual crisis. You know, for instance, the crisis of loss that comes, you know, the emotional crisis that comes when we lose a loved one. Yeah, I see this, not rarely in this position, that people will come to the monastery and possessed by grief. Possessed by grief. And it's not because they didn't love the loved one. They did love the loved one, the one they've lost. They loved the partner or the child or the friend that had passed away. But they didn't have a sufficiently conscious connection to the relationship, a conscious relationship to their capacity for being loving. And so when the pain of loss comes over, it overshadows. And sometimes when I sit and listen to people who are sharing their grief, and I'm not a great one for telling them stories about how they're going to be reborn in a better place and all that. I don't personally know anything about whether they've been reborn in a better place, and I don't think it's a terribly kind or wise thing to tell people that, if you don't know that's the case. But what I do try to do is to listen to the pain, listen to the grief, listen to their feeling of loss, but then when the time is right, to try and reflect back to them, remind them that there's still this love, that they're still loving the person that they've lost, and to somehow to remember that, to come back to that, because that's an energy. That's an energy, that's a beautiful energy that can sustain us, that can support us. But if we don't have a conscious relationship with that energy, if we don't know how to go to that place, if all we've been doing in our life is actually giving it out unconsciously, or sometimes it happens in the case that for some people they're feeding on it. All they do is they feed on other people loving them, taking love, seeking it, going around from relationship to relationship, looking to be loved. And they may succeed with to a certain extent, a certain quality of love. But what they haven't realized, and it shows up when they do find themselves in a position of the pain of loss, or threatened with loss, the anxiety that comes, it shows up they can't go to that place where they have the potential for simply being loving. And we have that. And so long as we're feeding on crisis, so long as we're feeding on drama, this can obscure it. It's like I said, it's a cheap rush, a cheap buzz to get off on crisis. So as a reflection this evening, I suggest that perhaps that when you see these newspaper headings or you listen to the tone of the voice of the news broadcaster and how it's trying to whip up the sense of crisis and doom and gloom and so on, to instead of getting into an intellectual argument or judgment about how it is, rather come inwards, come into the body, feel where we feel. Where does it affect us when somebody's whipping up a crisis? Or again, as I said before, gossip, the sensationalism. Where does it affect us? Feel it in the body, become mindful of it. And then in the exercise of becoming mindful of it, we let go of it just a little bit. And then we remember our refuge in awareness, which is a sustainable form of energy, something really worth cultivating. Thank you very much this evening for your attention.